I'm concerned. They ought to be knocked out of contention for something like that. They ought to just blow them out. And every player who participated, suspended for the balance of the season. Let them be fined as well. Let a lesson be learned. Think I'm being too harsh? Look, I know a lot of people follow these games avidly. And these players are paid a lot of money. And this was really an abuse tonight. A horrible abuse. And what kills me is that there are kids who look up to these players, and then you see something like this and you wonder, what in the world are people thinking? Oh, I know there are a lot more important issues to deal with in the world tonight. Additional troops going to Iraq, the question of what's happening in Washington, all sorts of issues. But you know something? I watched this on television. And I realized millions were watching. And I want your reaction. We'll spend 1 hour on it. That's it. But I want your reaction. Big game is tomorrow. Is today. Big game is today. Can you imagine if a brawl like that broke out between us?
Yeah, you're right. There are millions of people watching. We're watching. And you're all lucky that I wasn't there, because there would have been some fans in the cemetery. I'm from West Oakland. I don't be playing that nonsense. This rhetoric by this little raggedy liberal talking about there were kids there, and they look up to these players. Well, do they look up to their parents who was throwing that junk at the players like they were caged monkeys in a zoo? And then you yap about they should have been blown out, talking about Detroit and Indiana, right out of the playoffs. Well, if I had been involved, you would have been more concerned about not having those fans' heads blown off. Enough of this nonsense. I don't know who the hell these people think they are. You're right. There are millions of people watching. And millions more need to watch, because there's more of this to come. Only on the real, not kind of reactionary level. You know what time it is. Slave time. Check it out. Yeah. You're listening to 104.1 Free Radio Santa Cruz, 106.7 Illinois, LUVER.com, the world, and RadioForAll.net, the universe, slave revolt time. Tonight, we're going to shoot our way into the same type of fool I blew up in the beginning. The rebellion on the NBA plantation. The NBA, it is clantastic. And we're going to deal with some of this on a more social, political level. So we got all that and a hell of a lot more on 104.1. Slave. Revolt.
Now, General Turgeson, what's going on here?
Mr. President, about 35 minutes ago, General Jack Ripper, the commanding general of Burleson Air Force Base, issued an order to the 34 B-52s of his wing, which were airborne at the time, as part of a special exercise we were holding called Operation Dropkick. Now, it appears that the order called for the planes to attack their targets inside Russia. The planes are fully armed with nuclear weapons with an average load of 40 megatons each. Now, the central display of Russia will indicate the position of the plane. The triangles are their primary targets. The squares are their secondary targets. The aircraft will begin penetrating Russian radar cover within 25 minutes.
General Turgeson, I find this very difficult to understand. I was under the impression that I was the only one in authority to order the use of nuclear weapons.
That's right, sir. You are the only person authorized to do so. And although I hate to judge before all the facts are in, it's beginning to look like General Ripper exceeded his authority.
It certainly does. Far beyond the point I would have imagined possible.
Well, perhaps you're forgetting the provisions of Plan R, sir.
Plan R?
Plan R is an emergency war plan in which a lower echelon commander may order nuclear retaliation after a sneak attack if the normal chain of command has been disrupted. You approve it, sir, you must remember. Surely you must recall, sir, when Senator Buford made that big hassle about our deterrent lacking credibility. And the idea was for Plan R to be a sort of retaliatory safeguard.
A safeguard?
I admit the human element seems to have failed us here. But the idea was to discourage the Russians from any hope that they could knock out Washington and yourself, sir, as part of a general sneak attack and escape retaliation because of lack of proper command and control.
Well, I assume, then, that the planes will return automatically once they reach their fail-safe point.
Well, no, sir, I'm afraid not. You see, the planes were holding at their fail-safe point when the go code was issued. Now, once they fly beyond fail-safe, they do not require a second order to proceed. They will continue until they reach their target.
Then why haven't you radioed the planes countermanding the go code?
Well, I'm afraid we're unable to communicate with any of the aircraft.
Why?
As you may recall, sir, one of the provisions of Plan R provides that once the go code is received, the normal SSB radios in the aircraft are switched into a special coded device, which I believe is designated as CRM-114. Now, in order to prevent the enemy from issuing fake or confusing orders, CRM-114 is designed not to receive at all, unless the message is preceded by the correct three-letter code group prefix.
Then do you mean to tell me, General Turgeson, that you will be unable to recall the aircraft?
That's not science. However, we are plowing through every possible three-letter combination of the code.
But since there are 17,000 permutations, it's going to take about 2.5 days to trace this more.
How soon did you say the planes would penetrate Russian radar cover?
About 18 minutes now.
Are you in contact with General Ripper?
No, sir, no. General Ripper sealed off the base and cut off all communication.
Where did you get all this information?
General Ripper called Strategic Air Command Headquarters shortly after he issued the go-code. I have a copy of the transcript of that conversation. If you'd like to read it.
Read it.
The duty officer asked General Ripper to confirm the fact that he had issued the go-code, and he said,
Yes, gentlemen. They are on their way in, and no one can bring them back. For the sake of our country and our way of life, I suggest you get the rest of SAC in Africa. Otherwise, we will be totally destroyed by Red retaliation. My boys will give you the best kind of starch, 1,400 megatons worth. And you sure as hell won't stop them now. So let's get going. There's no other choice. God willing, we will prevail in peace and freedom from fear and in true health through the purity and essence of our natural fluid. God bless you all. And he hung up. We're still trying to figure out the meaning of that last phrase.
There's nothing to figure out, General Turgeson. This man is obviously a psychotic.
I'd hold off judgment on a thing like that, sir, until all the facts are in.
General Turgeson, when you instituted the human reliability test, you assured me there was no possibility of such a thing ever occurring.
Well, I don't think it's quite fair to condemn the whole program because of a single slip-up, sir.
Hello, seekers. Here we go again. And hello, especially to the skeptic inside you who might still believe.
Well, you know what time it is now. Ruins of Empire. You would think that the end of Western civilization has arrived. Not because of imperial illegal wars that are setting the whole world on fire. Not because of the destruction of the environment or the collapse of the ocean and a fish stock that has plunged dramatically, but because a couple of Negroes on the NBA plantation threw some blows at some white folks. We're going to go into this a little bit. But not by usual suspects that are a little bit too easy to crush up. Because, if you have been halfway awake, you would have noticed everyone from Pat Buchanan to, Fox News babbling on and on. But let's take another angle at some of our enemies pulling out their daggers. This is from a liberal talk show host. John Rothman from 810 AM KGO, the noted liberal station in the area. We're going to examine what this individual had to say and see if there's really that much difference between our conservative enemies and our liberal enemies. So, first off, let's see how he sets it up. On the night that this happened, more or less helping to set the tone of the revenge against the Negro Rebellion. So let's check out what Rothman has to say, and then we'll take it from there. Dig this.
They should have suspended the game, and both teams should have lost as far as I'm concerned. They ought to be knocked out of contention for something like that. They ought to just blow them out. And every player who participated, suspended for the balance of the season. Let them be fined as well. Let a lesson be learned. Think I'm being too harsh? Look, I know a lot of people follow these games avidly. And these players are paid a lot of money. And this was really an abuse tonight. A horrible abuse. And what kills me is that there are kids who look up to these players, and then you see something like this and you wonder, what in the world are people thinking? All I know, there are a lot more important issues to deal with in the world tonight. Additional troops going to Iraq, the question of what's happening in Washington, all sorts of issues. But you know something? I watched this on television, and I realized millions were watching. And I want your reaction. You're just supposed to spend 1 hour on it. That's it. But I want your reaction. Big game is tomorrow. Is today. Big game is today. Can you imagine if a brawl like that broke out between Cal and Stanford? No, I'll tell you, I'm almost, I am unmerciful when it comes to this. I think there has to be a big penalty. How will the NBA clean up this terrible mess? How does this league find fairness in a situation where nearly everybody acted wrongly? And I will tell you, as Bob Kravitz suggests in the Indianapolis Star, some people acted illegally. Criminally. I have to tell you, the Pacers, the Pistons, from the NBA and from lawyers representing some of the fans, we are going to see one heck of a lot of lawsuits. How did we come to this? And where was the security? You know, Kevin and I were watching. Here are the referees standing there doing nothing.
Shut up and listen.
8080810. I want to know what you think. And is a fine enough? Should it be more? 8080810. By the way, the two teams meet again on December 25th in Indianapolis. So you can bet your life on Christmas Day everybody will be watching. You know, they ought to throw the book at them. At least that's what I think. Jump.
All right, now it's interesting how Rothman is all in an outrage and going on and on about how he would be unmerciful when it comes to these types of events and how shocked he was. This wasn't an abuse. And what were people thinking? And on. After all, these players get paid a lot. So you know where he's going with this and who the quote-unquote responsibility is laid on. First off, let me clarify something. I put a few people in the cemetery for doing less infractions to me than what happened to Artest. So I'm just going to be frank. I don't play that stuff. We live in a world now where they think that Negroes are supposed to be some kind of monkey in an invisible cage. You know, you go to a zoo, and the only reason why these cowards throw food and other objects at these gorillas and stuff is because they're in that cage. So they know that the gorilla can't get out of this cage. Well, in the NBA plantation field, there's supposed to be an invisible cage where you can do and say just about anything you like amongst the Negroes in this zoo, and they just supposed to step and fetch and take it. After all, as Rothman's saying, they get paid a lot of money. As if that has something to do with someone's dignity and self-respect. This is just a barbaric and savage society. But also, you know, there's a lot of hocus-pocus madness going on. And we see these events occur from time to time. When Tyson was in his little episode, this is supposed to symbolize the rape and abuse. When OJ was in his little farcus, that was supposed to symbolize domestic abuse and wife killing and, you know, all this types of degradation. And now, a couple of Negroes throwing some blows at some fans after one has a beer and a cup thrown in his face. This is supposed to somehow symbolize the decline of Western civilization. Look, a while ago, two fathers, Thomas Junta, 42 years old of Reading, was watching his 10-year-old skate during a summer stick practice, you know, this little hockey stuff. And he got somewhat worried about the aggressive play. So he called down to the coach, Michael Costin, 40 years old, and said, hey, you know, they need to cool it out. Costin replied, that's what hockey is all about. So what did Junta do? Did he go down and say, well, you know, I don't want my kid participating in this types of, you know, high impact stuff, considering that they're just little kids? No. A few minutes later, he's beaten Costin to death. Junta weighed 275 pounds. So he was 100 pounds heavier than Costin, bashing him in the face. The kids were there. His own sons were begging him to stop. And when it was finally broken up by people, it was too late. Costin's dead. Now, this type of stuff goes on and on. This is just a part of everyday American life. Not too long ago, a father knocked down and kicked the baseball coach when his son was not chosen for the All-Star team. Just a few weeks later, a youth baseball coach was charged for breaking the jaw of an umpire whose call he disagreed with. They got a term for it called sports rage. And they're not even referring to the players. They're talking about these mad maniac fans. And parents. Lincoln Kennedy in 1999 played for the Oakland Raiders. They were playing Denver. They lost the game. And the next thing they know, here comes another showering of ice rocks being thrown by parents and fans. One of the ice rocks smashes through Lincoln Kennedy's face mask and busts him up. And he looks down at the ice rock, and there's a battery inside. And he saw the fan who threw it. Lincoln Kennedy walked around the aisles, got that fan, and whipped that ass. Then the cops came and wanted to arrest Lincoln Kennedy. So Lincoln Kennedy said, well, look, if you're going to arrest me, I'm suing everyone. First start arresting him. then I'ma sue the stadium because we've told you guys the whole game that these guys are throwing these deadly objects and you guys did nothing. You're supposed to sweep up after it snows, you know, like a day before the stadium, because these fans in America nowadays in different parts of the world don't know how to behave themselves. But you guys neglected to do that, and now here I get smashed in the face with a deadly object. This is a constant feature in America. So to see these fools play innocent and act like all of a sudden, because a couple of Negroes are throwing some blows, that this is the degradation of American society and we need a rebirth of a nation, is somewhat fanatical and somewhat racist at its core.
Thanks, Trace. And you know what? Listen, I want to just add some facts here. But I have to say that one has to overcome an intense feeling of depression and disgust to even talk about this stuff, because you can't understand. There is indeed a fan rage thing internationally. You know, when I was in Europe, I used to witness these lining up of left-wingers versus right-wing Nazis at soccer games, and they would duke it out. That became a regular feature, particularly in England and Germany. I remember I've seen this. But here, we have a little added ingredient. It's called race. Now look, who is this fan in the white hat? So we want to talk about criminals. We want to talk about criminal behavior. Let's talk about it. The man in the white hat, his name is John Green. He was caught on tape and identified over the weekend as the fan that threw the cup. Well, it winds up that it has been reported that this gentleman has a criminal history, including the following cases. 1903, operating under the influence of liquor, operating a vehicle while visibly impaired. 1989, assault with intent to do great bodily harm, less than murder. That was his wife, by the way. 1989, escape from prison. 1986, carrying concealed weapons. 1986, uttering and publishing, which is used as a false, forged, altered, or counterfeit record, deed, or instrument to injure or defraud. Okay, so homeboy's got a list. Oh, and by the way, you know, the gentleman happens to be Caucasian. Now, that is the gentleman that instigated the whole thing. Because what actually occurred, Artes hard-fouled Wallace, Ben Wallace, and then Ben Wallace pushed his face away from him out of anger. He didn't want to knock the hell out of him, so he just pushed him away from him. And then, you know, artists like the drama, so he laying on the table like he's hurt. And then as soon as he got hit by the cup,
Artest was just more or less diffusing the thing, because Wallace kept on and on, you know, as far as, you know, come on, Wallace threw a towel at him.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You know, and the refs got in between. And Artest, who already has, you know, a reputation, was basically playing the kind of role of like, look, I'm not trying to instigate nothing. Because you even saw Reggie Miller come over and pat Artest as he was in between them, like saying, good, brother, you know.
And they cut all that out. They cut all of that out of them little clips that they played thousands of times over hundreds of media outlets in America. Without explanation. Thank you, Tracy. Now, we talking about violence in the society. Remember, just recently, there was this case where they had the football game down south. Ended up in a brawl last year. People came to the stadium, and what did their t-shirt say? Shut up and hit somebody. They came to the stadium with t-shirts that said this. And sure enough, there was a brawl at the end of that game when a defensive player picked up the quarterback and threw him down like a sack of potatoes. The fans got on the field, blah, blah, blah. We'll go into the history of this stuff later, because when you see the history of it, you're going to understand. This is the transfer of the American judicial philosophy into sports. That is, We ain't taking no stuff from no Negroes. They banned this man for the whole season. The whole season.
See, personally, if it was me, this is why I couldn't be in the NBA. See, Stern would have to worry about his own existence. Because, see, this has gone dramatically too far. Mm-hmm. And there's in a gumpified, droned-out society, there's an overemphasis on sports as it is. This whole thing is about big business and, you know, and all
that's
of
what
that
it is.
Diversion. And then you got all of these impudent men who feel and see that their little balls get cut off at work and everywhere else concerning the class struggle. So they put all of this overemphasis and energy
into
sports. Mm-hmm. You know, into the whole sport. This team, that team. Should Barry Bonds be traded? Should they get players around Barry Bonds? This endless hours going on and on, playing these fantasy football games. You know, all of this juvenile stuff. This overemphasis in sport. I'm not talking about playing sports, staying healthy and all of that. That's something else. You know, if you're in the martial arts or whatever, I have no problem with that. But this whole thing of setting your whole world around, sports figures and upset because a particular athlete won't give you an autograph and whining on the sports shows about that and stuff. So then, in this big business arena, where only a minute amount of people in this country can play at this level, of course, if there were only 300 truck drivers who drive trucks, then truck drivers would make an enormous amount of money. But since being a truck driver is easily replaceable, of course, you don't have that type of leverage. In pro sports, you do, because only a finite amount of people can play at this particular level. So there goes a part of the reason why you have enormous salaries and stuff. So all of these players, though, have to use their labor. If you don't have produced the labor, you don't make it in pro sports. So instead of looking at it a class aspect and learning what is going on within a capitalist society about why, in part, these athletes make this much, instead you get this kind of seething jealousy.
Yes.
And as the NBA has taken on more of an urban kind of hip-hopish tone among certain segments, you have these people who traditionally just want black people just to shut up and perform, you know, without all of the other elements, this seethe underneath, you know. Now, here they are stupid enough to spend their last dollar. They should be using it to keep their electricity on and organizing within their union to get some real money in health care. But they end up spending it on going to a baseball or basketball game, flat broke, ass out, and then they're seething because the people they're watching are making millions of dollars and don't look like them. See, this is this warped thing that's going on, and it's exploited within this whole overall consumerism society, where, you know, people are supposed to buy more, get more, drive better cars, never be satisfied, etc., etc., on a monetary basis and stuff. So all of this stuff helps fuel in to the point where these clowns actually think they have a right to violate these people's space. You know, since they've paid their last buck, that somehow gives them the right to treat someone like they're not human. But next, let's see how this liberal, John Rothman, goes on as he gets a call from Mark, who questions, though, the fans' action. But let's see how Rothman, the liberal, deals with it. Check it out.
On Rothman, we're reacting to the unreal NBA altercation. Got completely out of control. And I guess my feeling about it is it's just such a bad example. for everybody. Mark calling from San Jose. Mark, welcome to KGO.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I've never seen anything like that. But I also think the fans bear a lot of the responsibility. You know, they had no right to throw items. You do have a right to self-defense. That one incident...
Yeah, but that wasn't self-defense. Did you watch those guys going at each other?
Yeah, I did. I saw it about 17 times.
Yeah, I mean, look, the fans were out of line as well. There's no question about it. But, I mean, to watch that kind of violence in a sporting event, it just infuriates me.
Yeah, it's very upsetting.
It wasn't boxing, for God's sake.
Right.
All right. What should the punishment be?
The fans have to take responsibility.
First, the players. The players really began it. But what should the punishment be?
Well, there's definitely going to be, I agree, with suspensions. But I agree there should be lawsuits against the fans, not the players.
Well, the fans have to pay the penalty. They don't have to have lawsuits. They committed a criminal act. They ought to be arrested. The police ought to have been there. They ought to be arrested for disorderly conduct at the very least, and for acts of violence as well, and the book ought to be thrown at these people.
And I agree with that 100%.
Yeah, all right. Well, you and I agree. I appreciate your call.
All right, you see what happened. Basically, one caller with at least a little bit, not a whole lot, but a little bit of sense, was trying to emphasize the fans' action too. But he kept wanting to go back, Rothman, on the players. You know, that it's all on the players, that the players started it. The players did not start it. Look, there's no doubt that when Artest filed, what's his face, the little Negro was upset, mainly because his team was down 15 points and they were going to lose. Artest didn't even foul him all that hard. But the ref called the foul. And, you know, I mean, look, you take it inside. You can't always expect to get laid up to you. You know, Wallace knows this. Wallace is one of the most physical players out there. He doesn't always let people just walk in, even at the end of the game. So, but Wallace overreacted and shoved Artest in the face. But then the rest got in between and, you know, settled the whole thing. That's between the players. It was all on the court. It has nothing. The fans are spectators. Once the fan threw something into Artest's face, that's when he started it. Because whatever was going on was being handled within the confines of the game. But once again, what you see is Rothman trying to act like the players acting out somehow stimulated the fans to act out. So it all began with the fans. Now, Artest has been hit 3 times. 2 previous times, he's told these clowns, look, some fan threw something and hit me in the face. Some fan threw something and hit me again. Not at this particular game. You know, throughout his career. But see, since there's a low priority within the league in protecting these players, because they want to accommodate the fans and basically disallow them to act out any way they wish, Artest pleads a personal safety. You can get an eye put out. And if you're in the NBA and you get an eye put out because some clown's throwing something from the stands, that's it. Your career is finished. Just like the NFL player a few years back when the ref, they used to use this kind of weighted thing in the flags. And the ref just threw it and it hit the NFL player in the eye. It put his eye out. That was it. His career was over. Over. So, of course, players are going to be sensitive to this types of shenanigans. As I said, there's a plantation zoo-like mentality. These fans are given preferential treatment. And what Rothman does is ignore this and just tries to divert your attention. this phenomenon has been going on not just in the pros as far as fans and, you know, audience members acting out, but through the society in general in its whole overemphasis in sports and living through your kids and so on and so forth. Once again, let's take the case of a while back. You had a situation where the 49ers youth football team and its players ran off the field suddenly, holding their stomachs, vomiting violently all over the sidelines. The parents and coaches ran to the young boys, aged 12 to 14, and had to carry them off into cars heading towards the hospital. What could have happened? How were all these players getting sick? Well, as it turned out, you had a parent, Jerome Breland, who was upset about his player being picked on, decided to put some kind of poison, basically, that induces vomiting into these various teammates' drink during practice. He wanted it to be in one in particular, but the team ran out of water, so a number of them drank this orange juice, and the next thing you know, a number of them are getting sick. He was, you know, of course, given 6 months of house arrest in order to pay and perform a year in community service. Now, this is a vile attack and a cowardly attack on some of these guys were preteen if you're 12 years old, but the others are in their early teen. Now, what kind of madness is this? This is the type of sickness that's constantly going on. Recently in California, in San Fernando, a father was sentenced to 45 days in jail for beating and berating a coach who took his 11-year-old son out of the baseball game. Quote, "How dare you take my son out after three innings? How dare you make him a three-inning player?" screamed the parent as he was slamming the coach against the car, according to the police themselves. You also had in New Mexico a dentist sharpen the face guard of his son's football helmet so he can slash open the opposing players. Five players and a referee were hurt, and the father was sentenced to 2 days in jail and some community service. So when I hear these guys just go on and on about the NBA, and these are parents acting out, just straight up acting out in the most vile way, to the point now where you have some cases where refs are giving an insurance. You have the option of buying an insurance if you want to be a ref, because so many refs are getting attacked by parents. A little while ago in the Midget League, another little midget football league in Pennsylvania, it ended in a melee involving 100 players, coaches, parents, and fans. A Maryland father, disappointed that his son had been left off the All-Star team, knocked down and kicked the coach, while an Oklahoma coach had to be restrained after choking the teenage umpire during a T-ball game for 5- and 6-year-olds. Now, as I was saying before, it's gotten so common that the National Association of Sports Officials recently began offering a new benefit to its 19,000 members, assault insurance. Now, the mere fact that these goons have the nerve to just go on and on about this little NBA progress, which the NBA players should have whipped some more ass as far as I'm concerned, once again shows how race and other dynamics are played out and how black male aggression somehow symbolizes the worst and most dangerous forms of aggression that one could witness in the most horrifying way. These Negroes are supposed to just take these abuses, you know, get caught, whatever, spit on, you know, slapped or whatever, and we just supposed to tap dance on the NBA plantation and on the U.S. plantation and smile and bear it.
Yeah, but you know what? See, what this at bottom gets into is this racist. It's deep, deep, deep in the psyche of white America. The supersized, super Negro beating down the helpless poor little old white boy. That is very real. These people are sick. I'm sorry, because
there's no doubt that there's a fear. As soon as they think they got the Negroes trained on the plantation, all of a sudden, here we come. Mm-hmm. You know? Once they just thought they got it wrapped up, you know? They even got Bill Cosby on our side. Yeah. And no sooner were they celebrating and patting themselves on the back, the Negroes just go buck wild in a kind of reckless abandon that basically shatters the myth that all's well on the home front.
And you can buy people, get them to do whatever you want them to do. See, remember now, we always got to remember, there's so many, 80% of the players in the NFL, I'm sorry, in the NBA are black. So much to the point to where it's almost redundant to say black basketball player. You know, I mean, that's what's in the mind, right? I think the fans, of course, as we know, particularly the fans that sit closest to the court, are predominantly white. And why? Those seats, you know how much those seats go for? If you get a seat in a chair, like where Jack Nicholson sits with the Lakers, that's $1,000 a game. That's a lot of money, man. I'm crying when they ask it for $20. $1,000? These are the people that are closest and can throw shit and is used to throwing shit and getting away with shit. Now, when you go on, there's another side of this that we have to see. It's not just that the fans are predominantly white with a fair amount of income, or either they're making enormous sacrifices just to pay these expensive tickets, and all the players are black, but also it gets a little confused because the players are not only black, but they're wealthy. In fact, a whole lot wealthier, for the most part, than any of the fans that come to watch them, and their wealth gives them a sense of freedom and independence that most Americans, regardless of their race, will never know, will never experience. So it ain't, not only are they black, they get more money than me. And that is deadly.
At least on the workplace. In other words, there are like certain Negroes on the workplace who are kind of grin and bear it. Not rich ones like these NBA players.
That's right.
But if you came into West Oakland and threw some, you know, orange juice on, you know, because you were mad because,
please,
you know, it you just be,
the, please,
you be,
please,
in the,
you know what? I done broke the jaw of white boys that act that way. I'm sorry to say it like this, y'all. I do not hate. I ain't no hater. But I've seen white folks at work get silly, and I had to break. I didn't intentionally set this up. I didn't do it out of no meanness or hating white folk. The boy was disrespectful, and it broke down, and I lost it, and I broke his jaw. This happens, and so it even happens at work.
Go ahead, Reg.
Yeah, one thing I want to add, too, you know, a lot of this, you know, jealousy and that kind of thing and the whole envy thing, I mean, first of all, you know, the basketball, the sports icons and stuff, you know, they're held up as the soap of hope in this country. And a lot of the you know, the parents and stuff, they see these athletes, you know, having some kind of what appears to be some decent life on the surface. But underneath it all, they're going through a whole lot of BS on the plantation, you know, just to have that kind of life. But a lot of that jealousy, you could see, like, even like during the Olympics, that this past Olympics, I mean, they was happy as a clam. I heard white guys talking about, oh, that's good for the players, you know, that's what they get. They're all arrogant. They don't pass the ball. You know what I'm saying? They complain about stuff like that all the time. And thinking about, the fact that, the NBA was once white, where I guess they did pass the ball, you know, there's probably no shortage of a desire to go back to that kind of thing. But in addition to that, I think it's interesting that what that liberal did, you know, when the guy called in and he had his own kind of thought on it, you know. And he wanted to, you know, explain that, well, the fans are, you know, complicit, or the fan initiated this, which is true. The fan initiated this. The liberal pushed him back onto the plantation into a certain frame of mind or a mindset that
siege
is
siege mentality.
Exactly. And recently I saw this guy on television, John Green, the guy who threw the beer. And they were asking him, well, you know, now they said, now you have all this on your record and so on and so forth. And you know, what if they bring all this stuff up, you know, and, you know, go after you and so on and so forth? Know what he said? Hey, whatever the punishment, I'm ready. So basically, you know, just cavalier about what's been done. You know what I'm saying? He's not worried about a thing, because why should he be? In America, when the pigs kill a brother, what's the repercussion? What are the consequences? Nothing. When an ordinary white fan or a white man in this country kills a brother, what are the consequences? Nothing. I think there's one white guy who's been executed in the history of the U.S., and maybe two, for killing a black man. And what are the consequences for throwing beer in a brother's face?
That's why I do my own executing.
Exactly. I mean, what are the consequences for throwing beer in a brother's face on a plantation called the NBA? The same consequence if you walked up to him on the street of the U.S. plantation and threw beer in his face. Death.
Right. Now, next, in an interesting way of rewriting history right before one's own eyes, listen how this liberal now places the players in ref in the center of the blame, with the players starting the mayhem. And you get an idea of how this type of consensus is developed, so that a mythology is developed to the point where they don't expect you even to watch these clips with honest eyes years down the road, because you'll already be programmed and gumpified down on how to think about this particular situation. Dig.
I'm calling from San Francisco. Dan, welcome to KTO.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Great.
I agree with everything that you said, except that where were the refs? The refs can't jump in the stands and stop that.
No, I didn't want them in the stands. I wanted to know where they were when that foul took place, and when they started pushing, and two players go at each other, the ref ought to have been right there stopping it.
And then we tell the refs all the time, let the players play the game.
So that wasn't playing a game. Well, if you're involved in a altercation on the court and the refs are there, their job, maybe it isn't their job. Maybe their job is just to score, tell you whether you've scored or whether you've broken the rule or whether you've committed a foul. But even in this case, I don't know that they called a foul.
But they can't stop that melee.
So you're
no
saying
one can stop that melee.
The melee begins, if you watch the tape, and it'll be replayed and replayed and replayed, it begins with two players going at it.
Exactly. And then a fan got involved.
It was Ben Wallace and Ron Artis.
Right, but then the fan got involved, and then it went to the stands.
But yeah, I understand that. But I'm only saying at the very beginning, the refs, I think, ought to have been right in there. Or maybe the security people at the at a game like that. And they've got to have loads of security at a game like that.
Yeah,
I didn't see any of the security people present either.
Well, you couldn't tell who was security, who was throwing punches. You couldn't tell anything.
That's right.
And I agree with you. I think the players that, and I think the fans too, the players that went in the stands, suspension for a year.
Yep. I agree.
The fans, and I think they should be prosecuted as well.
Do you agree with me? Both teams, there shouldn't have been a winner in this game. They should have suspended the game, counted both as a loss.
Honestly, I do.
Yeah, I think that'll be my answer. You're both losers in this one.
Yeah, and if that's what you're going to partake in, then good luck to you.
All right. We may be tough, but we're right there.
Have a great show.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye.
Now, what's sick about what some of this is that you know that these guys are just talking out of their ass in many ways. Because when this little liberal is talking about how, and the one little caller talking about how the players should be suspended for a year, and then the fans prosecuted, they know good and well they don't mean that. They know good, because all of the emphasis has been on the players and punishment for the players and naming of the players and stuff. You didn't see any emphasis in any of the stuff this guy has been saying as far as, where are the cameras? Why aren't they getting down the names of these people? Why aren't they investigating right now? We know how they look. Now, if some incident had happened, you know, with a bunch of Negroes involved in this type of stuff, and they didn't know who they were, they would be talking about how they got them on film, the police should be looking over this right now, and et cetera, et cetera. But you see, all of his emphasis, once again, is on the players, where he comes up with this make-believe thing about Wallace and Artest going at it, and this is what helped create this whole thing fermenting and stuff. Artest was not creating any of the ferment. He was laying back, and the refs were actually in between them. Most people thought that, look, there's 15 to 19 seconds left in the damn game. The Indiana Pacers are 43 seconds left in the game. The Indiana Pacers are up by 15 points. It's over with. So there's no need to be, you know, stressing out and stuff. Even which gives an indication that this fan is just the instigator and stuff. Because his team, if he was actually for the Detroit, not the, you know, they weren't going to win regardless. So what's he doing getting involved? But once again, to show how this stuff historically is emphasized during certain periods and played off during other periods, if it's the right people. You know, Bobby Knight, the former Indiana coach, now he's a coach, you know, for some other team in Texas and stuff. He's had a history of violent rampages and stuff. When he was at Indiana, he choked a player in practice. He threw a vase against the wall, physically intimidating his secretary. He punched an Indiana University administration official one time. He headbutted a player on the bench during the game. He called one player, one of his own players, a nigga one time. He was also given a reprimand because of the way he had an accumulation of all of these things. In other words, he wasn't kicked out just because of any one of those incidences. And if you looked or listened to some of the talk show hosts when they would bring up Bobby Knight, many of these same white callers and liberals and conservatives would talk about how he's a disciplinarian and how you need this type of stuff. They make every excuse under the sun for this maniac. Now, this is someone who was convicted in absentia and sentenced to 6 months in jail for hitting a Puerto Rican policeman during the Pan Am Games. He even kicked his own son on the sidelines during a game. He shoved a fan one time into the garbage can, and he attacked an assistant coach after a game. Now, when you hear these same fans within the same society not bringing down the hatchet and talking about moral accountability and all of this, it's just the players now. Now, here's a coach, one of their legendary coaches, who is supposed to be some kind of guardian because he's often recruiting 17, 18, 19-year-olds under his wing. Yet he's acting like this, a racist, a violent, you know, thug, so on and so forth. Yet this type of behavior never really rippled many of the feathers of many of these people who are screaming for vengeance right now. Now, this is tied into the fact that you had a Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission and survey, you know, checked out amongst these young athletes what's going on. And the stats that they found out were that amongst the young kid athletes, half of them said that they had been yelled at or assaulted by, you know, parents, coaches, whatever. 17.5% reported being hit, kicked, or slapped. 8.2% were pressured into harming other players. Now, it's not a wonder that in America right now, 7 out of 10 kids quit organized sports before they hit their 13th birthday. Now, you can't blame this on the NBA. You can't blame this on professional sports. This is a sick, barbaric society that has problems deep within its core and psyche and is looking for every other way to explain them out and excuse them out and to act them out. That's like a Ku Klux Klanner making the excuse that the reason why he lynched this black person is because black people are taking his jobs and stuff, you know, or black people are bringing down the morality of the society while he's posing with his daughter, taking photos of the lynched black corpse and about to make lynching postcards out of them. I mean, this is this madness going on here.
And you know what? Let's just, I have to go back to Mr. Rothman because it's particularly sickening. This guy thinks he's some kind of liberal, but it shows you what has happened to American liberalism. Merciful in punishing the players. Okay, are you unmerciful in punishing the man that started the melee? In fact, when people started pointing it out to him, he quickly diverted that discussion to stop it before it could get started. And that's a strange kind of situation, because what you're starting to see here is a merger of liberalism and conservatism when it comes to what? When it comes to us. In fact, that was a little slogan we used to have back during when we were defending the buses that black children were in that were being pelted in Boston in 1975 by unfortunate, you know, white people at that time. We said, it ain't the bus, it's us. And you know, you look at now this Mr. Rothman, you know, it's kind of sickening because he doesn't even attempt to provide any analysis as to what actually happened. So let's look. I heard this ignorant person, Mr. Rothman, say that it was no self-defense involved. Now, wait a minute. Okay, artist runs into the stands, and so does Stephen Jackson. But was that all that happened? No, it is not, brothers and sisters. What happened was some of these idiot fans came on the field, came onto the court. And you know what happened when they came on the court? They got served. If you come on my, now that's literally where to work, that's where they work. They can't, I mean, what can they do? They got, sir, if that's not self-defense, you tell me what is. No, it was these idiots. Now, I want to be really honest with you about this, because I'm not sure. Maybe these elderly, over 40, white gentleman was so stupid and confused that they think they can walk up to people and ball up their fists and not be a threat. I don't know. Maybe that's how they act in the bar. I don't really know. But you see that kind of faking? Let me show you what that faking does. In Wisconsin, on Sunday, just passed, there was a Laotian hunter. He ran into six white hunters. Laotian dude ain't saying nothing. Now, it winds up, it might have been some private property involved. But, you know, you hunting. You out in the woods. You don't know where no damn property line is. And you know what happens? Not only was he shot at first they came up to him uttering racial epithets at this man. Now, he'd been here long enough to know what a racial epithet is. So he's tense. Now he's tense. He's on the defense. Then one of these idiots fired their weapon. Now, I don't know if they fired, how close they fired it to, but it just wound up that Blood was a sharpshooter for the National Guard. Blood hit the ground, rolled over twice, blah, 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 blah. Five dead white boys and a wounded white boy. And I'm sorry, I'm not laughing. Y'all, this is sick. But what made them think they could go up to a man with a gun and assume that not only do you dehumanize him and use racial epithets without consequence, but then you're going to open up on the weapon and he's both standing there and say, oh, Lord, please don't kill me, Mr. White Man. Come on, y'all. Go ahead.
Yeah, also, the article here says Cha Vang is a guy. Cha Vang is the son of General Vang Pao, probably the best known Hmong in the United States. Vang Pao commanded the Hmong secret army that the CIA assembled to fight communism in Southeast Asia during the 1960s and 70s. So, you know what I'm saying? A little get back. But yeah, I wanted to say too, man, that all that is true. I heard Charles Barkley on the radio, on television the other day, and you know, that people were talking about Artest and what should happen to him and all that kind of stuff. Now, Artest himself has gone on to the Today Show and said that his suspension's okay, he's okay with it. But then he went on as the right wingers like to say and promoted his album. Now, what's wrong with promoting your album? But Barkley said that was tasteless, and that Artest needs anger management. And of course, everybody else is chiming in saying that, you know, hip hop culture is to blame, you know, and that the hip hop culture, according to the guy who's on drugs on the right wing radio.
Oh, Fat Rush Limbaugh.
According to Rush Limbaugh, hip hop's, you know, seeped into the basketball culture and so on and so forth. And that hip hop's a problem. But, and then you get people like, Davey D, you know, on, KPFA talking about, you know, what's going on, you know, with the hip hop situation. You know, first you had the Source Awards, then you had the Vibe Awards, the fight, you know, little fight breakout melees with hip hop and so on and so forth. Well, last time I checked, you know, hip hop, you know, I'm thinking maybe somebody like Rush Limbaugh to make his own album, because he has a lot more ambitious ideas about hip hop than hip hop actually has for itself. Because hip hop, you know, is about, I mean, what is it that sells the records? The white audiences eat it up, because, you know, once upon a time, you know, when I was growing up, the white kids listened to rock and roll. And they didn't like our music because they said, all we sing about is love. Then rap music came along. Of course, in the early stages, it was more balanced. You had, you know, the braggart rap. You had, you know, different types of rap. You had political rap. And then the white audiences with the white purchasing power, you know, started to dictate what types of, what the genre should be. What kind of music should be, you know, the predominant theme. And that came to be kind of gangster music. And to this day, gangster music does not advocate taking out, you know, the establishment, of course, taking out no members of the establishment. But they certainly don't advocate, like Sister Soldier said years ago, you know, to take out a few white folks a few days of the week. You know what I'm saying? I mean, when you got people like Snoop Dogg with lyrics like, when the pigs try to get at you. Park it like it's hot. Park it like it's hot. When a nigga get an attitude, pop it like it's hot. It's okay to pop. You know what I'm saying? It's okay. Your brother. Black destruction is what sells the records. It ain't, you know what I'm saying? So I'm trying to figure out what hip-hop Rush Limbaugh is talking about, because hip-hop he talking about don't attack the establishment. It certainly don't go up in the stands and get at no fans.
Well, Limbaugh knows that all he has to do is say the boogeyman issue. And often in this droned-out, gumpified society, many people aren't going to look at what's real or not. This is how Shelby Steele could basically, you know, pull this whole thing from hip-hop to the Taliban. You know, basically that, you know, Johnny Walker Lynn guy. One day he was just a nice suburban kid. The next day he's listening to hip-hop. And the third day he's joining the Taliban. Now, there's no real reality to this, but this is what you can basically sell in this type of society, in this in this particular day and age. This is how sick things are. But next, let's move on to Rothman as he goes into, wait, hold on a sec, as he goes into the melee on the NBA plantation. And how it may affect and infect peewee leagues in America, and how this is a much deeper problem going on. Let's check out this clown, Rothman, and take it from there, dig.
You may think that a melee on a basketball range is not worthy of discussion. But what happens on a basketball court reflects the entire range of our emotions. The entire attitude of who we are. And if we're going to be a civil society, it ought to begin in sporting. Because, look, I took my kids to sporting events. Hey, Joel has his soccer game tomorrow morning, his last soccer game of the season, 6 years old. You know, if he watched something like this on TV, he's going to say, that's what you ought to be doing when you're playing sports. No, we tell him, what do you do at the end of the game? Everybody shakes hands with everybody. You know, you get two lines of kids, everybody shakes hands with everybody. You don't have this kind of thing. They ought to require that in adult sports, for God's sake. 8080810. John, calling from Hayward. John, welcome to KTO.
Good evening, or good morning.
Thank you.
I watched this thing on the news coverage, and I was appalled. So a little background on Artez, number 91 on the Pacers. This past week, he was suspended for 2 games because he wanted to take 2 months off to promote a rap album. So he wanted to take 2 months off of work, this multimillionaire. And he was quoted as saying, he was quoted this way, I am going to need somebody to give me a dictionary so I can understand the word integrity. We have a much deeper problem in sports than this fight. This is just the tip of the iceberg, and I think we're beginning to see a place where hardworking people paying $75 to $95 a ticket going to watch people who have a thug mentality. I just think it's not going to sell anymore.
Yeah, I agree with you. But on the other hand, there are a lot of people who love this. That's what they go for. You know, you've seen it for years in other sports, particularly hockey, where you have these huge eruptions. But I have to tell you what I saw tonight, appalling. You agree with me? Both teams ought to pay a penalty?
Absolutely agree. I think even some of the guys on ESPN, the coverage, the shoot-around team, even giving some credence to the fact that the players were entitled to go into the audience or however they stated, I was shocked because most athletes you don't cross that line. You just don't. And just for them to even say I could understand why somebody would do that on national TV is just giving a little bit too much room to...
Darn right. You're absolutely right to slap them down on hard.
Well, even Shaquille O'Neal was quoted later on ESPN as saying that he called in to say if it was him, he would have went into the crowd. We're going to begin to see a divide between the fans and the NBA.
Then you know what? You know what? On all sports, if that's going to happen, let's start curtailing it. Let's really weigh it to them if they do it.
Well, I say let's start saying, hey, you know, we pay your way, you know, and I'm really kind of fed up. I played 4 years of college basketball myself, and it's not sportsmanship. It's something that I'm embarrassed for the NBA product now. I'm embarrassed to even introduce my children to even think about watching it. It's not what it was when we grew up, and I hate saying that because now I sound like an old man.
No, I remember Wilt Chamberlain right here in the Bay Area. You know, it was a great time. It was something that you enjoyed. And you never saw this kind of violence.
Yeah, absolutely. Willis, you know, I mean, I'm thinking I was a big New York Knicks fan as a kid. You know, Willis Reed, Walt Frazier, you know, all those guys. And then, you know, as much as I hated the L.A. Lakers because I was a NorCal guy, I mean, Magic Johnson, Worthy, these kind of guys, even
Bill Nathan Russell, for God's sake. You know, there's so many, these are living legends. And
yeah.
You look at these guys now who are paid exorbitant amounts of money. Beyond what they ought to be paid, in my judgment. I'm crazy about this. I think they ought to have a cap on what any professional athlete can make. They ought to put a cap on maybe $100,000 a year, $200,000 a year, something within the range of what we make.
It is really crazy, and it's sad because what we have in our school system now are kids that are just, you know, learning how to shoot the hoop and hope I'm going to sign the big contract. And, I mean, how many of these young kids are giving up their eligibility to go to college, to go into the NBA? And they're smoking a pipe dream. And it's just it's really unfortunate. So,
well, I think if you put a cap on a lot of this, including salaries, you're going to be in a lot better shape. When I say 100 to 200,000 range, that's what it takes to live here in the Bay Area for a lot of people. And, and you want to let them have a house and send their kid to private school, fine. But, you know, you pay these people millions and millions of dollars.
Yep.
And what do you get for it?
You get this thug mentality. You know, and it also, don't forget what happened at the Coliseum this summer with the chair incident.
Yep.
You know, and with the A's. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. And there's been, you know, there's been fights in sports before. The Dodgers, back in the Candlestick days, some of the players went into the stands. And even when I was a kid, I saw the Kansas City Royals go into the stands at the Oakland Coliseum.
But this, what happened tonight was just uncomfortable.
Control.
All right, I appreciate the call.
All right, once again, you hear this whole rhetorical roundabout and direct rhetoric about the social ills of this particular thing and how it's not acceptable at all, and you gotta just lay it down on them and so on and so forth. And then it ties into how there should be a cap on pro athletes' salary. They should make $100,000 to $200,000. Now, who's going to make the money? Who's going to make all the extra money? The owners? You know, because they ain't giving it back.
Damn right.
But then at the same time, many of these same people are these free marketeers. They make every excuses in the world for the Walmart CEOs and other, you know, criminals, for Halliburton and all of that, for why they make so much. Because they all have pipe dreams of fitting in their shoes someday so that they too can exploit third world people to pieces. But when it comes to a few third world people in this plantation, all of a sudden, their so-called free market capitalist ideology goes out the window, and they want to put all of these particular barriers and safeguards on what someone could make. When people's salary crashes down because of outsourcing and other things to, you know, $3-$4 an hour, they say it's the markets. But when it's NBA players making extremes amount of money, then all of a sudden they want some corrective factor on the markets and stuff. It's just sickening. But also, once again, you have a situation where they just love to pretend that these things, this is so shocking. You know, earlier this year, Texas Ranger pitcher Frank Francisco threw a chair and hit a woman in the stands in Oakland when there was this, you know, back and forth between the players. And one of the players had to be restrained because he was going to go up into the stands and kick the husband's ass who kept taunting and stuff. Then in April 19th of 2003, though, was the incident where an athletic fan, an Oakland A's athletic fan, threw a cell phone at the Texas Ranger outfielder Carl Everett. Earlier that year, you had a fan come out of the stand and grab umpire Lass Diaz around the leg during a game. Then, Let's not forget the infamous September 19, 2002 incident, where a father and son burst onto the Chicago baseball field and slammed the Kansas City Royals first base coach Tom Gamboa to the ground, punching and kicking him. It took his whole team to come and pull those two maniacs. The father's like in his late 30s and his son's like 15 years old, and they just start beating him up. You know, and he's an old man. They just attacked him and stuff. Then you had Ty Domi for the Toronto Maple Leafs. He wrestled with a fan in the penalty box and then poured water on taunting spectators. A fan lunged past the glass and threw a punch at Domi. And, you know, all this mayhem going on. Then, of course, you had the legendary fight in 2000, baseball. This involved the L.A. Dodger players and Chicago Cubs fan when a spectator grabbed the hat of the Dodger backup catcher, Chad Cougar, in the bullpen. Cougar went into them stands, and several Dodgers followed right along, trading punches with fans. Suspensions were levied out to 16 players and three coaches. The number of game suspensions totaled 76. Well, this is amongst 16 players and three coaches. Artest almost alone surpasses the 76 game suspension. And the only reason why he doesn't surpass it is because they only play like 82 games in a whole year. A metal object was thrown in 99 at Mile High Stadium. It hit the cornerback Dale Carter in the cheek, causing blurred vision and stuff. This type of madness has always gone on. Always. And back in 79, you had a radio DJ. He blew up disco records in the outfield at Comiskey Park. And a riot nearly ensued at Disco Demolition Night, quote unquote, against the Detroit Tigers. Some of the 50,000 fans got into the park for 98 cents if they bought a record. They tossed them onto the field, threw beers, cherry bombs, and started fires. Game two of the doubleheader had to be called off. That's how silly the whole thing got. My whole point in mentioning this is that, you know, this type of stuff on the American plantation is, this is not some kind of shocking, you know, surprising particular event. There's a viciousness underlining a lot of stuff that goes on in these particular sports arenas, where jealousy, fantasies, feelings that you can act out in ways that you normally wouldn't act towards the players, that you wouldn't act towards the citizen, and get away with it with some kind of autonomy.
Meantime, my wife just returned from an 8-hour trip of driving my brother-in-law back to his job at Walmart so he could attend our family dinner here in the Bay Area. You don't get no days off at Walmart after a turkey day. You know that? Well, anyway, just keeping it real, y'all. Now, and by the way, let's just keep it real this way, too. This punk, that's right, punk, Rothman, goes on and on about all this discipline, this, doing this to that. Did you ever hear him talk about what should happen to police that murder innocent unarmed children, which occurs with deadening regularity? But not the intensity from Mr. Rothman that this issue is, because what lies beneath, y'all? What really lies beneath? And here, this is really sad, but I think I'm going to share it with you because hopefully you can see through this. This particular article is written by somebody that thinks they're radical, right? Now dig this. They're describing the incident that occurred. And this is just a sentence. I just want to read this one sentence. This man's name is Mr. Dave Zirin. This is taken from Counterpunch. And Counterpunch is a radical kind of, you know, news service. Listen to this sentence. He's talking about how everything was coming apart and it's a shame. And then he says, And there was that moment when tragedy truly becomes farce, seeing Rashid Wallace step in as, quote, peacemaker, unquote. Now, you know why that's sickening and racist? Because Rashid Wallace did step in as a peacemaker and did what he could to break it up. Well, why is that a farce? It's because they want people to accept the caste that they have created for Rashid as a troublemaker. Why? Because Rashid said in an interview in the Oregonian that these young black players were, quote, dumb ends being manipulated and used by David Stern because they didn't know nothing. And they were being exploited. That's what Rashid said. He was fined. Now, dig this. I don't understand how this happened. He was fined for those comments.
Stern has too much power, as even one player said after this particular fine with this suspension.
Yeah.
That Stern has too much power. So there's some grumblings going on, but it's not amongst enough players who are more or less just kind of playing the Joker role. You know, as long as I get mine, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah, but it ain't funny, y'all. This ain't no joke. Because here again, now, they talking this punk, Rothman, I'm sorry, that's what he is, a little racist punk, talking all that stuff about the millionaires in the NBA. Did you know that the majority of NBA players make the minimum, which is currently $275,000 a year. That's what the majority of the players. Yes, they tell you about the Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, but the overwhelming majority of the players do not make those type of salaries. I want to tell you right now, it's just not true. It's a lie.
Well, also what's interesting is a while back they did a thing where the number of particular teams that were going in the playoffs, they did a thing where they looked into how many of them had criminal records and driving under DUI and arrested for, you know, marijuana and all of that. And they saw that it was lower than the average of the overall society. But the image, of course, of the NBA players is that, you know, it's astronomically high. And that's because of the particular scrutiny and focus and hyperbole that's often put under on the players in this kind of microscopic way and stuff like that. So every particular action that they make is magnified and talked about, and then it's often racialized in this kind of hip-hop mentality type of arrogant way that they like to set it in.
Yeah, that's true. And just as far as like what the excuses they use for, you know, particular things, that they would say that it's hip hop and stuff like that that motivated his actions, Artest's actions. I mean, it's interesting that, I mean, why not the war? You know, why not the cap? I mean, why not the? I mean, they're never going to admit those kinds of things, you know. Like recently I heard on the liberal KPFA, they were talking about the Niagara Falls. Some author went to Niagara Falls and she was talking about, why it is that people commit suicide in Niagara Falls. Well, they got a new reason. It's called a hydroelectric something. It's the hydroelectric, mystic something that draws people in, you know. The power, the sheer power of the water, you know, draws you in. It makes you jump, you know what I'm saying? But, so, you know, I wonder how many rich people at the bottom of that.
Everything but what is. Here exactly. We have a raggedy president and his neocon thugs talk about preemptive strike. There's no proof that Saddam or Iraq has weapons of mass destruction or is about to attack, but this empire needs to preemptively strike. This is the type of violent culture we live in. But go into another aspect of what has happened on the NBA plantation. A while ago, former basketball star for Denver, Mohamed Abdul-Raouf, formerly known as Chris Jackson got into a fracas because he refused to stand towards the American flag during, you know, the beginning of the game. I'm about to go into that a little bit, a commentary style, to give a little flavor of what the NBA is really all about. Hold on a sec. What's your name, boy? Mahmoud Abdul Rauf. No, it ain't. It's Chris Jackson. Now, what's your name, boy? Mahmoud Abdul Rauf. Clarence! Hey, Thomas! What you and Bill Cosby waiting for? Swing it! Now repeat after me. What's your name, boy? Mahmoud Abdul Rauf. Now, wait a minute. Let's get something straight here. You just do as you're told. When we say jump, you better get up and jump. When we say rebound, you best start rebounding. When we say shoot, you know you better shoot. And when we say stand, especially when it's for our national anthem, you get your black ass up and stand. What the hell you think you doing? What the hell you think we brought you here for? Your job is to play the proper role we have modeled out for you. Do you understand me, boy? So when we say stand, you get your nigga ass up and stand.
You still be you, one that's done all the things you set out to do. Stand.
There's a cross for you to bear.
Things you go through if you're going anywhere.
Be up to him. Number one, I don't think the league could back down. I think if they
Clarence Tom, I mean, back, Charles Barkley.
Make concessions. I mean, first of all, I mean, I don't know a lot about the Muslim religion.
Well, look at here. Master can't allow us to have our own autonomy on the NBA plantation, or the next thing you know, we'd be trying to have some kind of slave revolt or something, and we be can't having that. You know what I'm saying? Did I say right, Master?
Thank you.
pledge allegiance to this rag. When word got out, sparked by a Denver radio talk show, that Denver guard Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf had not been standing at attention to the American rag flag of repression, Rauf was suspended for not obeying one of the NBA's clantastic plantation rules. He then faced the wrath by many freedom-loving Americans for trying to express himself freely in this free society. After all, who does Abdul-Rauf think he is? A free man? A man, period, in America's eyes? He was not brought over to America to express or control his freedoms, and he was not brought over to the NBA's plantation basketball courts for his free democratic or human rights. He was brought over to Sam's stolen land and into the NBA to perform a job for his owner and make his owner money. It doesn't matter how he feels as a black man, a human being in America. That's why when Abdul-Rauf said to NBA officials, overseers, that he would stay in the locker room while the nationalistic anthem was played, they said, no, you must come out and stand and play the proper role modeled after their beliefs. When Abdul-Rauf asked, didn't that override his constitutional rights? Abdul stated that the NBA officials said that they didn't really have a legitimate response for that. In other words, what they were saying to Mahmoud Dred Scott Rauf was that there was no law concerning a black man, once again, that the head overseeing NBA white man was bound to respect. What? Did he forget that lesson? And also, they don't care how you feel about the flag or anything else. They don't care if you're in pain even looking at the flag. Suffer peacefully, boy. When a questionnaire stated to Abdul that the American flag represented freedom, apparently not for Abdul, though, who was having his freedom of expression violated over this same rag of a flag, Abdul correctly said that, quote, it's also a symbol of oppression and tyranny, unquote. You know, like the tyranny of Sam's oppressively murderous terror campaigns by America's CIA flag-waving death squads in Nicaragua, killing Nicaraguan women, workers, leaders, activists, and people who are striving for forms of freedom and democracy in their society and workplace. The Nicaraguan people took the U.S. government to court, the world court, for Sam's terroristic, savage, and psychotic acts of liquidation. Sam was told to pay the Nicaraguan people $19 billion in reparations. Or the internationally condemned illegal invasion by the red, white, and blue flag toters in Panama. Or the illegally violent, brutal Ku Klux Klan terrorist organization that has, with the help of other flag-waving, God-fearing American citizens, killed thousands of black people in this country. And its continuous acts of tyranny against humanity. Or former President Wild Bill Clinton's bombing of civilians in Iraq, killing innocent men, women, and children and babies after the unsubstantiated claim by Kuwait that the Iraqi government had been plotting to kill Mad Dog ex-President Bush the First. Or was that the killing based off of the incubator stories? Never mind. They're all lies. Just like current President Boy George, weapons of mass destruction claim and justification for more Iraqi plundering and extermination. And wait, hold on a minute. How many Indians are left in the home of the slaves, land of the... Forget it. Anyway, we know historically and hysterically how many fools and how fools act when some athletes conduct themselves in ways in their eyes are violating their role to stand up in line in a dignified posture towards the flag, quote unquote. They get thrown out of Mexico by the Olympic delegation like Tommy Smith and John Carlos in 1968 for punching a black glove fist for black unity and hounded for years by freedom-loving and expressing Americans. they have had American columnist and now commentator like Brent Musenberg call them, quote, black-skinned stormtroopers, unquote. Now that's tolerance, Americana style. Now, Akeem Olajuwon gave us his religious invisible man beliefs concerning and perspectives on this very political act, saying, quote, in general, Islamic teaching requires every Muslim to obey and respect the laws of the countries they live in, unquote. Well, even if those laws are racist, sexist, and biased against the poor, Akeem, what about the laws of the land that said that blacks didn't have the right to vote, or equal housing and equal protection under the law, equal opportunity for jobs? What about the laws that enforce slavery? What are we supposed to do? Read that Quran? Just like old enslaver pushed the Bible with your obey your master rhetoric in it, it's no wonder that the ruling elite classes all over the world love to push out in every street corner and villages religion to the masses. So the comment by some Islamic scholars, leaders, athletes, that standing for the flag is okay because it's an act of respect that does not contradict their faith, what does that mean? Or how telling are those statements? If, as Akeem and others say, that Islam is a religion of peace, Islam's own savage slave trade of Africans set aside, yet we know that this flag represents an unholy license of terror, death, destruction, violence, and slavery mixed with genocide. A rag that has so much blood on it that it will forever be wet. Unfortunately, a couple of days after the NBA sidelined Abdul Rauf in his rights of free expression, he made his concession, saying that he would stand and pray. This was to the delight of the suspension-wielding NBA officials and large numbers of hypocritical Americans in the public who can now sweep this issue under the rug and out of their minds, just like they basically have done with the comments and actions of Aryan Nation Nazi man Mark DeFuhrer, if I had it my way, I'd gather up and burn all the niggers, Furman. Someone who also pledged to serve and protect. Protect what is the question? The answer? The flag and all that it truly stands for. In essence, this action by Abdul Rauf to not stand for the flag was a political social action representing his beliefs. By not standing for the barbaric symbols, Abdul stood tall momentarily. But now, by saying he's going to pray is acceptable as long as you are obedient to their rules. Take Malcolm's case, for example. When Malcolm was in New York, there was a killing in LA of a black man by a cop. Malcolm's first inclination was to take direct action against the thugs. The black community in LA was waiting for Malcolm to come down. The Nation of Islam leader Elijah Muhammad stopped him. The committee said, just give us some advice, Malcolm, and we'll take it from there. With action of our own. Once again, the Nation of Islam leader Elijah Muhammad stopped that. A short while later, a plane crashed and Malcolm, broken down from taking direct action, basically said Allah took care of it. As if a plane full of people, some of whom may have been black, perishing on this plane was God's justice for the dead black male in LA. The seeds of Malcolm leaving the NOI were sprouting. So when Abdul says that, quote, in no way am I compromising in Islam, it speaks about honoring your contract, unquote. Abdul knows, at least deep inside, that the contract with the NBA and America is not valid. And if that contract infringes on your life and liberty, to hell with that contract. Unfortunately, by standing and praying, Abdul is kneeling to Sam and his laws of tyranny and oppression. Or in other words,
What's your name, boy? Chris. It's Chris Jackson. That's right. And don't you ever forget it, nigga.
So they can be pimped and controlled by the masters with the whips who gave their head slaves whistles to punish those who get out of line. One crazy look and your name is in the book. Banned for a game or fined for stepping out of line. Foul, technical foul, personal foul. What's that foul smell? Got brothers trapped in their contractual cells. Just as long as we get paid and have a tight fade, you can just call me special ed, yeah, because I got it made. How was that in hockey, baseball, tennis? One is not punished or labeled as being a menace if they decide to fight or so-called incite a riot and not follow the political diet. The NBA is clantastic. Oops, I mean, fantastic. What is the real definition of the NBA? Where it is only in the NBA, or not only in the NBA, where no black activists in the Niggas Bondage Association or the Natives Bondage Association, where if Negroes don't behave accordingly, Negroes better apologize. That's my definition of the NBA. And as the ball is thrown into the air for Negroes to jump and bump to entertain people like Trump, and Nike gets paid by youth buying their new pumps, or because Michael didn't ask if he could wear his other shoes, so he had to take some lumps, while Nike has corporations in Indonesia that exploit workers in dumps, that's the NBA. And we support this activity by taking part in this capitalistic art. Take a look into the stands and hear the clapping of hands by fans who don't give a damn about the black man, as long as his plans are to remain hoes and put on good shows, only in the NBA.
Slaves tonight, as it's clear that in our life we're gonna have to get up and stand up, not for the rag flag of oppression, but for our own liberation. Until the next time, slave revolt. Out.
And the ghettos play long nights on a hot summer's block where you sip your brew and never touch. touch your glass.